back to the 1930s for our new two-part P.G. Woodhouse classic serial. The writer Evelyn Waugh once suggested that the gardens of Blandings Castle are that original garden from which we are all exiled. Happily, at Radio 4, we hold visiting rights to this idyllic Shropshire location.
Uncle Fred in the Springtime by P.G. Woodhouse. Starring Alfred Molina, Patricia Hodge, Rufus Sewell, Lloyd Owen, Christopher Neame, Simon Templeman, Matthew Wolfe, Sophie Winkleman, Martin Jarvis, and Jared Harris. Ian Ogilvie is the voice of P.G. Woodhouse.
Springtime. A young man in form-fitting tweeds walking up Park Lane. An observant passerby scanning his face might have discerned on it a keen, tense look, like an African hunter stalking a hippopotamus.
Right ho, Pongo El Top. Tally ho.
And he would have been right. Pongo Twistleton was on his way to try to touch Horace Davenport for £200.
Perhaps you would not mind waiting in the library, Mr. Twistleton, sir. The sitting room is in some little disorder at the moment.
Spring cleaning?
No, sir. Mr. Davenport was entertaining his uncle, the Duke of Dunstable, to luncheon, and over coffee His Grace broke most of the sitting room furniture with the poker.
Ah. What made him do that, by the way?
I'm inclined to think, sir, that something may have occurred to annoy His Grace.
Seems plausible. I have an unpredictable uncle myself. Thank you, Webster.
Thank you, sir.
A few moments later, there entered a young man of great height, but lacking the width of shoulder and ruggedness of limb which make height impressive. Nature, stretching Horace Davenport out, had forgotten to stretch him sideways. And one could have pictured Euclid, had they met, nudging a friend and saying, "Don't look now, but this chap coming along illustrates exactly what I was telling you about a straight line having length without breadth."
Ah, well, hello, Horace.
Hello, Bonger. I was just changing. Has Webster told you about my Uncle Alaric's latest?
He did just touch on it. His theory is that the old boy was annoyed about something. Does that seem to fit the facts?
Absolutely. He was in dangerous mood when he got here. And when the time came for him to catch his train, he told me to go to the station with him, and I said I couldn't, and that seemed to touch him off. He reached for the poker and started in.
Oh. Why wouldn't you go to the station with him?
I couldn't. I was late for my dancing lesson.
Dancing lesson?
Your sister insisted on it.
Valerie did.
She said I danced like a dromedary with the staggers.
Rather complimentary, what?
Polly says I shall be able to go to the Bohemian Ball tomorrow night. I'm going as a Zulu warrior. I want to take Valerie to it and surprise her.
But isn't Valerie Latuke?
She's flying back today.
Who's this Polly who has crept into your conversation?
Oh, she's the girl who's teaching me. Polly Pott. I met her through my cousin Ricky.
Polly Pott? Any relation to Claude Pott, private investigator?
His daughter. What do you know about Claude Pott?
Well, the fact is, old man, happening to pass the writing table just now, I chanced inadvertently to catch sight of that document.
I wish you wouldn't read my letters.
Oh, I wouldn't. It was just a report. Mentioning two M's, three F's, and some cocktails or something. Signed Claude Pott. What's that all about, anyway? I only ran my eye over it.
So now I suppose you'll tell Valerie I had her watched by detectives while she was at Latuke.
Great Scott, was that it?
Yes, bit unfair on your sister, I know, having her spied upon.
I should say so.
But Pongo, it was the Drones Club weekend at Latuke. The thought of the girl I love, surrounded by about 87 members of the Drones, in a foreign pleasure resort, was like a knife in my heart. For heaven's sake, don't breathe a word about this to Valerie.
Of course not. Now, Horace, old top, I wonder whether you could possibly see your way to...
Excuse me, sir.
Yes?
Telegram, sir.
What? Thank you, Webster.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, Lord. It's from Valerie. You worm. Stop. How dare you have me followed at Latuke. Stop. Our engagement at an end. Stop. Notice appears times tomorrow. Stop. Only excuse for conduct. You have finally gone off rocker. Stop. P.S. Look at your Uncle Alaric. Stop.
Bad luck, Horace. That last bit's fair enough, I suppose.
Forget my Uncle Alaric. What price your Uncle Fred?
What about him?
Loopy to the tonsils.
My Uncle Fred is not loopy to the tonsils.
Yes, he is. Anyway, if Valerie's handed me the mitten, I shall plunge straight into a riot of reckless living. My first step will be to take Polly Pott to that Bohemian Ball.
Horace, old man, sorry to go on, but owing to circumstances over which I had no, or very little, control...
Buck up.
Can you lend me £200?
No.
Oh. All righto. Well, in that case, I'll have to try Uncle Fred. Tinkety-tonk.
Ickenham, good morning.
Uncle Fred, it's me, Pongo.
Why, Pongo, my boy. And what a morning down here in Hampshire. The yeast of spring is fermenting in my veins, and I am ready for anything. You've just missed the big white chief.
Aunt Jane?
She's driving to Dover, off to the south of France to nurse her mother, who's having one of her spells.
By the way, you've heard my sister's broken off her engagement to Horace.
Oh, she'll come round. Excellent sign when a girl speaks of a man as a goggle-eyed nitwit and says that her dearest wish is to dip him in boiling oil and watch him wriggle.
Has she said that?
I should imagine so. Showing I feel that love still lingers.
Well...
Your aunt, I remember, broke ours 6 times in all, bless her. The sweetest, truest wife man ever had. I hope her mother responds to treatment and that she'll be back with me soon. But not too soon. And you know, Pongo, the detective Horace commissioned to chase Valerie with bloodhounds was Old Pot. Mustard Pot, we used to call him.
I've heard of him.
One of the best. They're rather apt to try to get people to play something he calls Persian monarchs. I've known him leave ruin and desolation behind him on every side.
Didn't you start him as a sleuth?
That's right. Well, young Pongo, how much?
Eh?
I can hear it in your voice. You've rung to make a touch. What's the figure?
Well, it's rather a lot. 250.
How in the world did you get in the hole for a sum like that?
I came a bit of a mucker at Lincoln. When I tried to get it back at Hurst Park, things came unstuck again. Upshot is that I owe the bookie 250 quid. He sent a fellow called Herb to call on me yesterday.
What did he say?
He didn't say anything. He just looked at me and nodded. So, if you could possibly see your way, Uncle Fred, to advance...
Alas, my boy, there has been a shake-up in the Treasury Department here. Your aunt has unfortunately decided to take over the family finances. My limit's a tenner.
Oh, my gosh. And Herb's going to call again on Wednesday.
I know just how you must be feeling. Nevertheless, leave it to me. There are absolutely no limits to what I can accomplish in the springtime.
But you can't come to London. Wouldn't Aunt Jane skin you if you did?
You appear to have forgotten that she is on her way to the south of France. Pip, pip.
Having put the finishing touches to his nephew's sitting room, Alaric, Duke of Dunstable, had caught the train to Market Blandings in the county of Shropshire. He dispatched a postcard some days previously, announcing his impending arrival. The postcard had had a mixed reception at the Blandings Castle breakfast table.
Can't you tell him we're full up, Connor?
Of course I can't.
Well, last time he was here, he poked the Empress in the ribs with an umbrella.
Clarence, I am certainly not going to offend one of my oldest friends just because he poked your pig with an umbrella. Do you really want him running amok with the drawing room fire irons?
No.
Yeah, he'd better have the garden suite. Good morning, Alaric. Oh, is your bed comfortable?
Morning, Connie. Ah, that whistling. I must get up. Have the car ready to take me to the station directly after lunch, would you? Got to go to London.
But you only came last night.
Doesn't matter. I've just glanced through the Times. My nephew Horace has gone and got his engagement broken off to the Twistleton girl.
But why?
How the dickens should I know? I've got to go and find out.
She was Lord Ickenham's niece, wasn't she?
Still is.
I know Lady Ickenham, but I've never met him. They say he's very eccentric.
He's potty. Everybody's potty nowadays. Except a few people like myself. Look at Clarence. Ought to have been certified years ago.
Don't you think it's simply that he's dreamy and absent-minded?
Absent-minded be blowed. He's potty. So's Horace. So's my other nephew, Ricky. Writes poetry, and now he wants to sell soup.
Sell soup?
Yes. He had the impertinence to ask me to give him £500 to buy an onion soup bar. I refused, of course. He was as sick as mud. Not so sick as Horace will be, though, when he's finished with me. I shall start by disemboweling him. Go and order that car.
Couldn't you tell Mr. Baxter to go and see Horace? He's still in London, isn't he?
Baxter? Yes, he is, the scrimshanking, four-eyed son of a whatnot. But I'm not going to have my nephew, half-witted though he is, subjected to the inquisition of a dashed secretary.
I know. My nephew Bosom is going to London this morning.
Bosom?
Lord Bosom, Clarence's son. You've seen him. He's very pink. He's down here for the Bridgeford races. Why couldn't Horace drive him back here? Then you could have your talk with him.
First sensible word you've spoken since you came into this room. Tell Bosom to rout him out and bring him back, alive or dead. I've got to get up. Where's Clarence?
Down at the pigsty, I suppose.
Don't tell me he's still mooning over that pig of his.
He's quite absurd about it.
Quite crazy, you mean? That pig is a very bad influence on his life. And if something isn't done soon to remove it, you'll find him suddenly sticking straws in his hair and saying he's a poached egg. Talking of eggs, send me up a dozen.
A dozen? How would you like them done?
I don't want them done at all. I want to throw them. A fellow's been whistling under my window for hours. Hark, there he is again. He's singing now.
Alaric, must you throw eggs at the gardeners?
Yes.
Very well.
That's it, my beauty. A good breakfast, huh? That's it.
Good morning, Clarence.
What? Oh, morning, Alaric.
Seen Bosom anywhere? I want a word with him. He's going to London today to bring Horace here. His engagement's been broken off.
Eh? My son Bosom's engagement? He's married, I'm pretty sure.
Not Bosom's engagement, Horace's.
Who is Horace?
My nephew.
And he is engaged?
He was, to Ickenham's niece, Valerie.
Oh, Ickenham. I know Ickenham. Friend of my brother Galahad. He used to be thrown out of nightclubs together. Unpredictable, as I remember. Pleasant fellow. Well, perhaps your nephew's interested in pigs. You know my sow, Empress of Landings, I think, Alaric. There she is. I believe you met when you were here in the summer.
Yes. Disgusting.
I beg your pardon?
That pig is much too fat. Look at her, bulging.
Well, she's supposed to be fat. She's already been given 2 medals for being fat.
Don't be silly, Clarence. What would a pig do with medals? There's only one word for that pig, gross.
Now, Alaric...
I don't suppose she gets a lick of exercise from one week's end to another. What she wants is a cracking good gallop every morning and no starchy foods. That would get her into shape.
What? Hand me back. Much obliged. Now, look. Are you under the impression that I want to enter my pig for the Derby?
I wouldn't, Clarence. She might not win. And then you would have had all your trouble for nothing.
Huh?
What you want is to get her out of your life.
Huh?
I tell you what, I'll take this pig over, lock, stock and barrel.
Take her over?
Yes. Have her sent to my place in Wiltshire. I'll wire them to expect her. In a few weeks' time, she'll be a different creature. Keen, alert, eyes sparkling. And you'll be different too. Brighter, less potty. Ah, there's Bosom. Hi, Bosom. What? Half a minute, Bosom. I want a word with you.
Oh.
Clarence, I am very worried about Alaric. He seems to have got so odd. He was asking me for eggs to throw at the gardeners.
All I should say was odd. He wants me to give him the Empress.
Does he? Well, then, of course, you will have to.
Hand me back my parcel. Mm. God bless my soul. Do you imagine for an instant...
And you imagine for an instant that I'm going to run the risk of having Alaric career through the castle with a poker? That's what he does when he's riled. I do not intend to have my home wrecked for the sake of a pig.
But, Connie...
There is no use arguing about it. If he wants the pig, he must have it.
Some 10 minutes later, seated in the cloistered coolness of the library, vainly trying to concentrate on Whiffle on the care of the pig, and feeling helpless in a hostile world, unusually for the ninth Earl, he had an idea.
The Earl of Ickenham! You bless my soul, man like that, 100 ideas for saving the Emperor's.
But then the Earl of Emsworth's gleam died away. While this ghastly duke remained on the premises, there wasn't the slightest hope of Connie allowing him to get away even for a night. Boys who stood on burning decks had a better chance of leaving their posts than the Master of Blandings when there were visitors.
Clarence, did you tell Alaric you wanted to enter your pig for the Derby?
No, I told him I didn't.
Then he misunderstood you. He said you did. And he wants me to get a brain specialist down to observe you.
I like his dash cheek.
So you must go to London immediately.
Eh? London?
Now, please, Clarence, don't be difficult. This is vitally important. Ever since Alaric arrived, I've been feeling that he ought to be under the observation of some good brain specialist. Do you know Sir Roderick Glossop?
Never heard of him.
He's supposed to be quite the best man in that line. Now, I want you to go to London and explain the whole situation to him, assure him that expense is no object and that he must come back with you. He will then tell us what is the best thing to be done about poor Alaric. You must catch the 2 o'clock train.
Very well, Connor. If you say so.
I do say so, Clarence.
Say, Beach.
My lord.
Beach, I want you to telephone Ickenham Hall, Hampshire. Personal call to Lord Ickenham.
Very good, my lord.
And when you get it, have it put through to my bedroom.
Certainly, my lord.
London.
How am I shaping, Polly? Are these good old steps?
Those are they, Horace. Ooh, look out. Mind your ass, guy.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I beg your pardon, sir.
Not at all. Not at all, sir. Think nothing of it. Your money or your life.
Splendid costume. Brigand, I take it.
You take it correctly, sir. I am a brigand. Whee!
Polly! Polly!
Oh, look out, it's Ricky. Now, Ricky...
Polly, what's this, Davenport? Hobnobbing at a fancy dress ball?
Wait, Ricky!
Out of my way! Horace, I'm going to break your neck, you black-bottoming excrescence!
What? I didn't know poets broke people's necks. Anyway, it's a Charleston!
I'm giving Horace dancing lessons, Ricky, you know that.
Well, he's giving me the pip. Dancing lessons. Dance to this, you creeping Lothario.
Oh! And you, take that! Oh, sorry, I misjudged the distance.
Give me that assegai.
Oh, Ricky!
So what do you advise, my dear Ickenham?
Right, we have here a knife, a radish and a piece of bread. In other words, one pig, one sister, one duke.
Oh, yes.
The duke wants the pig. The sister says he's got to have it. The pig, no doubt, would prefer to be disassociated from the affair altogether.
Indubitably.
Very well, then. To what conclusion do we come?
I don't know.
The whole situation pivots on the pig. Eliminate the pig and we see daylight. What? No pig, says the duke. And after a little natural disappointment, turns his thoughts to other things. There can be only one answer, my dear Emsworth. The pig must be smuggled away to a place of safety and kept under cover till the Duke has blown over.
How?
I knew your razor-like brain would cut cleanly to the heart of the thing. The trick of it is this. You creep out by night with an accomplice, and one shoving and one pulling, you load the animal into some vehicle and ship her off to my family seat in Hampshire, where she will be looked after like a favourite child till you are ready to receive her again. Who is there at Blandings that you can trust?
Nobody.
Oh. Speaking of tricks, I pulled off a neat one this morning on a pink fellow in Park Lane.
Huh? I suppose you wouldn't care to come down to Blandings yourself.
I should love it. But unfortunately, I'm under strict orders from my wife to remain at Ickenham. Were she to hear anything from her old friend Lady Constance, my prestige in the family home might never recover.
Oh, yeah, quite, yes. Quite, dash it.
However, there is always a way. We must place the thing in the hands of Mustard Pot.
Who is Mustard Pot?
Private tech. Would you care to come along and sound him?
Does he live far from here?
No, quite close.
I ask because I have an appointment with Sir Roderick Glossop at 3 o'clock. Do you know him? Brain specialist?
I sat next to him at a public dinner not long ago.
A talented man, I believe.
So he told me. He spoke very highly of himself.
Connie wants me to bring him to Blandings to observe the Duke, but I'm all anxiety to see this man part. Wouldn't there be time?
Certainly. We shall probably find my nephew Pongo there. A nice boy. You will like him.
Now, I couldn't do it, Lordy.
Eh? Why not?
Well, between you and me, I was once bitten by a pig.
Golly.
Not really. Yes, Lordy, and ever since then, I've had a horror of the animals.
You can't be bitten by the Empress. She's as gentle as a lamb.
I was once bitten by a lamb.
Golly. Mm. Well, I'm disappointed. If you're seeing Glossop at 3, Emsworth, you'd better be starting.
Eh? Oh, yeah, true.
Which way are you going, Lordy?
Harley Street.
Oh, I'll come with you. I've got to see a man up in that direction. We could share a cab. This way. Are you by any chance familiar with a card game called Persian Monarchs?
Eh? Persian Monarchs? Yes, as a matter of fact.
Hmm.
A setback, Pongo, an unquestionable setback. I'd been relying on Mustard. And now what about Polly? Is she out?
She's in her room, Pot told me. Dressing or something, I take it.
Right. Ahoy, Polly! Come down here, I want to see you.
Who's there?
Frederick Altamont Cornwallis Twistleton, 5th Earl of good old Ickenham. Have you forgotten your honorary Uncle Fred?
Uncle Fred! Oh, well, it is nice seeing you again.
Dashed mutual, I assure you, my dear. I say, how you've grown, little gal. Polly, you're a peach. Give us a kiss.
Oh, I say. Oh, hello. I'd forgotten you were there, Pongo. Miss Polly Pott, my nephew, such as he is, Pongo Twistleton.
How do you do?
How do you do? I mean, how do you do? Won't you sit down?
What I'd really like to do is to lie down. I'm a wreck, Uncle Fred. I was up nearly all last night at a fancy dress dance.
We know all about the Bohemian Ball, my child. That is why we are here. We have come on behalf of Horace Davenport, who I am informed by Pongo here, is still in a state of alarm and despondency on account of your young man's unfriendly attitude.
Ricky was marvellous last night. You ought to have seen him trying to dodge Horace's spear.
Well, he now speaks of going round to see Horace and breaking his neck.
Yes, Ricky's got rather a way of wanting to break people's necks.
Well, could you get in touch with your Ricky and assure him that this won't be necessary? Because, come on, Pongo.
Because Horace's behaviour towards you has always been scrupulously correct.
Oh, I've calmed Ricky down now. He's forgiven Horace. I'll ring Horace and tell him, shall I?
On no account. Pongo will handle the whole affair. Tell Horace the forgiveness was all your doing, Pongo, thus ensuring financial reward from said Horace. You had better toddle off, my boy, and bring the roses back to Horace's cheeks.
I will.
The sooner you get that check, the better, what? Run along.
Righto, right.
And what does your father think of your engagement, Polly?
Oh, he says Ricky isn't worthy of me. He's got an extraordinary idea into his head that if I'm encouraged, I may marry Horace. It's just because Ricky hasn't any money, of course. But I don't care.
Well, bless you, my children.
But how can we get married? He makes practically nothing with his poetry. He tried to borrow some from his uncle. Do you know the Duke of Dunstable?
Only by reputation.
Ugh, he seems an awful old man. When Ricky told him he wanted £500 to buy an onion soup bar, he was furious.
Did Ricky say he wanted to get married?
No, he thought it better not to.
I don't agree with him. He should have shown Dunstable your photograph. Now, of course, the ideal thing would be if you could meet Dunstable and play upon him like a stringed instrument.
I say, Uncle Fred, Horace isn't there. He's gone.
Gone?
Webster told me he had just left in the car with a pink sort of gentleman and a lot of luggage.
Pink chap?
He may be away for weeks. And that bookie is planning to unleash herb on me if I don't pay up by Wednesday.
Well, just at the moment, my brain is bespoke, Pongo. Polly here is in trouble, poor child.
Trouble? Oh, I say, what's the matter?
Well...
The old, old story. Sore need of the ready, doesn't see where she's going to get it. Still, your fresh young intelligence may be just the thing. Polly, it's possible that Pongo may have an idea. He nearly had one about 3 years ago.
Rather.
Well then, as we were saying, the solution is for Polly to glide imperceptibly into the Duke's life and fascinate him before he knows who she is. We want to get him saying to himself, a charming girl, egad. Just the sort I could wish my nephew Ricky to marry.
Difficult. For one thing, the Duke's away somewhere.
He's at Blanding's Castle.
Isn't that your pal Emsworth's place?
It is.
Well, there you are. Get Emsworth to invite Miss Pott down there.
Not quite so simple, Pongo. Emsworth has a sister, Lady Constance Keeble, who holds revisionary powers over his visiting list.
I understand she's more or less a fiend in human shape.
Precisely. Callers, just when we need to concentrate.
I'll go.
Tell them to go to blazes. You see, Pongo, the real trouble is old Mustard. If Polly had a presentable father, well, still, there it is. Oh, I say, Emsworth.
Could I have a glass of water?
Oh, yes. Of course.
Something the matter, Emsworth?
My dear Ickenham, disastrous things happened. What am I to say to Connie? She'll be furious. Thank you, my dear. I'm not sure. You remember, my dear Ickenham, that I left you to keep an appointment with Sir Roderick Glossop, the brain specialist. I think I told you my sister Connie had instructed me to bring him back to Blandings to observe Dunstable. He breaks furniture with pokers and throws eggs at gardeners.
Yes?
But my dear fellow, Glossop refuses to come because he says I insulted him.
Did you?
Yes.
How?
Well, it started with my calling him Pimples. He didn't like it.
I don't quite follow you.
Well, who do you think this Sir Roderick Glossop turns out to be, Ickenham? A boy I'd known at school, most unpleasant boy with an extraordinary number of spots on his face. I was shown in, and he said, you don't remember me, eh? So I took a good look at him, and I said, God bless my soul, it's Pimples.
An affecting reunion.
But his manner immediately lost its cordiality, and he asked me brusquely to state my business. And then he sneered openly at what he called this absurd fuss about a mere pig. Well, I wasn't going to stand that sort of thing from young Pimples. One word led to another, and in the end he was ringing the bell for me to be shown out, and telling me that nothing would induce him to come to Blandings. And now I'm wondering how I am to explain to Connie.
Ha! Nothing more fortunate.
What?
I see daylight.
Oh, no, Uncle.
Yes, Pongo. Briefly, the position is as follows. It is essential that young Polly... Oh, by the way, you don't know each other, do you? Miss Polly Pott, Lord Emsworth.
How do you do?
It is essential that Polly goes to Blandings and there meets and fascinates Dunstable.
Oh?
I'll explain later.
Oh.
Now, you are in urgent need of a Sir Roderick Glossop. Oh. She is in urgent need of an impressive father. I am prepared to play both roles. Tomorrow, by a suitable train, Sir Roderick will set out for Blandings Castle, accompanied by his daughter and, yes, Pongo, his secretary.
Hey!
My dear boy, didn't you tell me that you were expecting a visit from Herb on Wednesday?
Exactly.
What better haven could you find than Blandings Castle?
Yeah.
You, Emsworth, will go down today on an early evening train and announce that Sir Roderick Glossop will be arriving tomorrow with his secretary and that you have invited him to bring his charming daughter. We shall follow tomorrow straight after lunch. Woohoo! Now, a thing we have got to get settled before our arrival is the question of names. I, of course, automatically become Sir Roderick Glossop. You, Polly, had better be Gwendolyn. Polly seems to me not quite dignified enough for one in your position. But what of Pongo?
Don't worry about me. They're going to call me this man. Lady Constance will say Ptarmigan, addressing the butler.
Actually, Ptarmigan isn't a bad name.
Ptarmigan, throw this man out and see that he lands on something sharp.
All right. Think of the names of some movie stars, Polly.
Fred Astaire?
No.
Warner Baxter?
Baxter would be excellent, but we can't use it. It is the name of the Duke's secretary. Confusing to have two Baxters about the place. I say, do secretaries mingle with the knobs or squash in with the domestic staff?
I'm not squashing in with any domestic staff.
Well, we'll try you on the knobs, but don't blame me if Lady Constance takes her lorgnette to you. I've got it! Glossop! Pongo! You can be Sir Roderick's nephew, Basil Glossop. How do you do, Basil?
Market Blandings. Market Blandings Station. A light here for Market Blandings.
Pongo, I think you know about my ambition regarding confidence tricks. Owing to all this Emsworth business, I quite forgot to tell you that yesterday morning the opportunity arose.
What?
Yes. I went to call on Horace Davenport myself early yesterday with the idea of extracting that advance for you. Finding him not at home, I waited for a while outside, and a pink chap came along. Something about this fellow told me that I could never hope for a better subject, and so it proved. He handed me over his wallet, and I walked off with it. The whole affair was a triumph of mind over matter, a psychological experiment, and I am modestly proud of it.
Uncle Fred, you ought not to be allowed at large.
Oh, I sent the wallet back, of course. My interest was purely scientific. The chap's card was inside, and I shipped it off by registered post. The reason I mention it now... Do you see the fellow coming along the platform?
You don't mean...
Yeah, that's the chap. His name is Bosham, or Bosom, or something. It was on his card, but I remember his address wasn't far from my own Doss house, so it seems odd that he should be here.
Oh, Lord, Bosom is Lord Emsworth's son.
Is he indeed? I presume he's here to escort us to the castle.
But dash it!
Tell me, I don't want to turn till I can see the whites of his eyes. Does he approach?
He's sort of backing and filling at the moment.
Yes, the decent diffidence of the English upper classes. He's wondering if I am indeed the Sir Roderick Glossop of whom he has heard so much. He shrinks from taking a chance. Where is he now?
Just abaft the try-your-weight machine.
Then watch me turn and nonplus him. Excuse me, sir. Do you know if I can obtain a vehicle of some sort here to take me to Blandings Castle?
Are you Sir Roderick Glossop?
That is my name.
Oh. Ah. Mine's Bosom. Well, we haven't met before, by any chance.
Unfortunately, no. The loss was mine.
Well, I'd tooled down in the car to meet you. Got some luggage in the van, I take it, what? I'll slide along and see to it, then we can tool up to the castle.
Splendid, my dear Bosom. Is there a large party there?
Eh? No. Only my father and my aunt and the Duke. And Horace Davenport.
Horace Davenport?
Horace Davenport?
The Duke's nephew. Well, I'll be sliding along and seeing about that luggage.
Yes, indeed. Slide away.
Now what? On arrival at this ghastly castle, we shall immediately find ourselves cheek by jowl with a chap who knows you, knows Miss Pott, and has been a close pal of mine for years. Hello, Pongo, he'll say, bounding up as we stand chatting with Lady Constance. Hello, Lord Ickenham. Golly, Polly, isn't this jolly? Here we all are, what?
Yes, my boy, I confess that I had not anticipated Horace.
What are we going to do?
Keep our heads and deny our identity.
And you think Horace will swallow that?
Who can say? I mean, with an uncle like Dunstable. Still, I feel we'd all do well to separate rather than confront him in a solid bunch. I shall walk to the castle, allowing you and Polly to go on ahead in the car and pave the way. All you have to do when you meet Horace is to give him a cold stare and say that your name is Basil. That in itself should carry conviction, for who would say his name was Basil if it were not so? As for Polly, as Mustard's daughter, you must have been taught to tell the tale as soon as your infant lips could lisp.
Oh, golly.
Ah, Bosom, my dear fellow. I see that you have collected our impedimenta. Very good of you to have bothered.
Eh? Oh, not a bit.
Tell me, is it far to the castle?
About a couple of miles.
Then I think, if you don't mind, that I will walk. It would be pleasant to stretch my legs.
Oh, well, that's fine. Might have been a bit of a squash in the car. I didn't know Baxter was turning up. This is Mr. Baxter, the Duke's secretary, Sir Roderick Glossop.
Hello.
How do you do? Well, this is my daughter and my nephew Basil, who acts as my secretary. This is Lord Bosom, my dear, Lord Emsworth's son.
How do you do?
And Mr. Baxter.
How do you do?
Well, cheerio. We shall meet at Philippi. Pip, pip.
Hi!
Hi!
Hi. You're the brain chap.
I am. How do you do?
A few. The others are in the hall having drinks and things. When I heard you were walking up, thought I'd come along and meet you. Dunstable's my name. Duke of Dunstable. Let's carry on. Now, I want to talk to you before Connie stuffs you up with all that nonsense.
Connie?
Emsworth's sister, Lady Constance Keeble. She's like all women, you know, won't face facts. She'll try to make you think that her brother is simply absent-minded. Don't let her fool you, the man's potty.
Indeed.
No question about it, the whole family's potty. You saw Bosom at the station, there's a loony for you. Goes up to London and lets a chap play a confidence trick on him. Give me your wallet to show you trust me, says the chap. Righto, says Bosom. So you can get a rough idea what Emsworth must be like. Should I tell you about Emsworth?
Do.
He's got a pig. He's crazy about it. He wants it to run in the Derby, told me so himself.
I doubt if the stewards would accept a pig. You might starch its ears and enter it as a greyhound for the Waterloo Cup, but not the Derby.
Exactly. Well, that shows you. Think you can cure him?
I seldom fail.
In that case, while you're here, I wish you would take a look at my nephew Horace.
Why? Is he giving you cause for anxiety?
Acute anxiety. You see... Wait a moment. God, that whistling fella again.
I beg your pardon?
Chap who comes whistling and singing outside my window, and always locked lone. A song I've hated all my life. I've been trying to get to grips with him, and he eludes me. I've got a dozen best new-laid eggs in my room, and sooner or later... But I was telling you about Horace.
Your nephew, you say?
One of them, my late brother's son, he's potty. The other's my late sister's son, Ricky. He's potty, too. My late brother was potty, so was my late sister.
And where would you rank Horace in this galaxy of goofiness, above or below the family average?
After what happened in the hall just now, most emphatically above.
What happened?
Well, it showed me that I'd wronged that chap Baxter. I expect you met Baxter at the station, my secretary. He should have come down to Blandings with me. But he insisted on remaining in London, claiming he had work to do. I didn't believe him. My feeling was that he was planning to go on some toot. When Horace told me this morning that he'd seen him at some dance or other a couple of nights ago, leaping about all over the place in the costume of a Corsican brigand, I was ready for him. The moment his foot crossed the threshold just now, I sacked him. And then this thing happened.
You were going to tell me about that, weren't you?
I am telling you about it. Connie had taken your daughter to show her the portraits in the gallery, leaving Bosom and your nephew and myself in the hall. And in comes Horace.
No sooner had I directed his attention to your nephew than he gives a jump and says, Pongo. Your nephew looked taken aback and said that his name is Basil. Horace, you see, had mistaken him for a friend of his. Well, nothing so very remarkable about that, you're saying. Might happen to anyone, quite, but mark the sequel. Right on top of this, Connie comes back with your daughter. She's charming.
I have not met Lady Constance.
Your daughter, I mean.
Oh, very. Her name is Gwendolyn.
So she told us. But that didn't stop Horace from going up to her and calling her Polly. Why, hello, Polly, were his exact words. That's what made me realize that matters were grave. I've always been uneasy about Horace's mental condition. Ever since he had measles as a boy and suddenly shot up to the height of about 8'6". Stands to reason a chap's brain can't be all that way from his heart and still function normally. Well, here we are. Phew. After you. Hello, where is everybody? Dressing, I suppose. You'll be wanting to go to your room. I'll take you there. What was I saying? Oh, yes. I then remembered that Horace had thought he'd seen Baxter at this ball affair, and it suddenly struck me that he must have developed, I don't know what you call it, but I suppose there's some scientific term for it, when a fellow starts seeing things.
You mean a sublunary medulla oblongata diathesis?
Very possibly. I can see now why that girl broke off the engagement. No girl wants a potty husband. It's dashed hard not to get one nowadays. Here's your room. I wish you'd see what you can do for the boy. Can't you examine him or something?
I shall be delighted. Just give me time to have a bath. I seem to have got quite a lot of Shropshire on my person. The moment I've removed it, I will be at his disposal.
Good. What with him and Bosom and Emsworth and that whistling fellow, I feel as if I were living in a private asylum. I'll see you at dinner.
The events of the evening had come as a great shock to Horace Davenport. The double hallucination he'd so recently experienced, coming on top of the delusion he'd had about seeing Baxter at the ball, had rendered him apprehensive in the last degree. So he had welcomed the suggestion that he should get together with Sir Roderick Glossop, nerve specialist, for a quiet talk. But now, so all his senses told him, he was suffering yet another hallucination.
Sir Roderick Glossop?
Yes.
Really?
Certainly.
My name's Davenport.
Of course, yes. Oh, come in, my dear fellow. You won't mind if I dress while we're talking. I haven't left myself too much time.
I say, do you by any chance know a man named Lord Ickenham?
Lord Ickenham? Yes, I've met him.
You're amazingly like him, aren't you?
Well, that's a thing nobody has ever said to me before, considering that Lord Ickenham is tall and slender, while I am short and stout.
Short?
Quite short.
And stout?
Extremely stout.
Oh, golly.
You really must forgive me. Your uncle gave me your case history. Was that the first time this sort of thing happened?
Yes.
Can you suggest anything that might account for it?
Well, I was wondering if loopiness is hereditary. I mean, if a chap's got a dotty uncle, is he bound to catch it?
I wouldn't say it was inevitable. How dotty is your uncle?
Fairly dotty.
I see. Had your father any such structural weakness?
No. No, he was all right. He collected Japanese prints.
He didn't think he was a Japanese print.
Oh, no, rather not.
Then that is all right. There need be no real anxiety. I am convinced that all we are suffering from is some minor nervous lesion, brought about possibly by worry. Have we been worried lately?
You bet we have.
Then what we need is a long sea voyage.
But dash it, we're a rotten sailor. Wouldn't Bournemouth or somewhere do?
Oh, Bournemouth would be just as good. We came here in our car, did we not?
Barbie Portsmouth two-seater, yeah.
Then directly after dinner, I advise that we steal quietly off and drive to London. Having reached London, we can pack anything that may be necessary and go to Bournemouth and stay there.
And you think that'll put us right?
Unquestionably.
One other point. Would there be any medical objection to just one good, stiff, energetic binge in London? You see, we do rather feel as if we wanted taking out of ourselves at the moment.
My dear boy, it is what any member of my profession would advise. Ah, dinner.
A lengthy conference with his hostess in the drawing room delayed Lord Ickenham after dinner, and it was only when the subject of the Duke had been thoroughly threshed out between them that he was able to tear himself away. He found Pongo in the billiard room.
That man Baxter, Uncle Fred, keeps asking me questions about my methods of secretarial work. He gives me the creeps.
I have felt the same thing myself. If you ask me, Pongo, Baxter suspects.
Then I'm jolly well going to get out of this.
Impossible. Have you forgotten that Polly has to fascinate the Duke? and would be lost without you beside her. Where's your chivalry? Besides, I shall require your help in snitching the pig.
What?
Oh, ah, no. I was forgetting. You're not abreast of that side of our activities, are you?
No.
Emsworth has a pig. The Duke wants it. Emsworth would like to defy him, but dare not, owing to that twist in the other's character which leads him, when defied on any premises, to give those premises the works with a poker. So, on my advice, Emsworth is resorting to strategy. I have promised him that we will remove the animal from its sty, and you will then drive it across country to Ickenham, where it can lie low, till the danger is past.
Oh, so I'm to become a blasted pig chauffeur, am I?
A brilliant summing up of the situation.
I absolutely refuse to have anything to do with the bally scheme.
Well, that's a pity, for Emsworth would undoubtedly have rewarded you with a purse of gold. This pig is the apple of his eye. Noblesse would have obliged. And remembering Herb, you could do with a purse of gold just now, could you not?
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Start pondering on it now, Pongo. And while you are doing so, I will show you how billiards should be played. Watch this shot.
One moment, if you please.
My dear Baxter, looking for me?
I should be glad if you could spare me a moment, Glossop.
You have not come to consult me in my professional capacity, I trust? We have not been suffering from delusions, have we?
I never suffer from delusions.
No, I should imagine not. Well, come on in. Push off, Basil.
He can remain. What I have to say will interest him also.
Oh, right. Stay, Basil. Let me just... By the way, the Duke was telling me that there had been a little friction on your arrival, Baxter. He said he had handed you 2 weeks' notice because Horace Davenport said he had seen you at a ball in London.
He has since discovered that he was misinformed and apologised. I'm continuing in his employment.
I'm glad. You wouldn't want to lose a job like that. A man can stick on a lot of side about being secretary to a duke. I'm afraid Basil here has no such excuse. Just an ordinary secretary, Basil.
A very peculiar one, I should have said. He seems ignorant of the very rudiments of his work.
Yes, I fear poor Basil has not had your wide experience. You were Lord Emsworth's secretary once, were you not?
I was, but I do not care to be reminded of a flaw in a successful career.
And before that?
I was with Sir Ralph Dillingworth, a Yorkshire baronet.
Yours has been a very steady rise in the social scale. Starting at the bottom with a humble baronet, slumming, you might almost call it. You go on to an earl and then to a duke. It does you credit.
Thank you.
Not at all. Odd sort of fellow, Dillingworth, isn't he? There was some story about him shooting mice in the drawing room with an elephant gun. Mm. They should have called me in.
They did.
I beg your pardon?
I say they did.
I don't remember it.
I'm not surprised. You see, it was unfortunate for you that I should have met the real Sir Roderick.
Are you insinuating that I am not Sir Roderick, Glossop?
I am.
I see. You accuse me of assuming another man's identity, do you? Of abusing Lady Constance's hospitality by entering her house under false pretenses? You deliberately assert that I am a fraud and an imposter?
I do.
And how right you are, my dear fellow.
What? Then who are you?
Call me Uncle Fred.
I will not call you Uncle Fred. And now perhaps it would interest you to hear about the local train service.
You speak as if you were under the impression that we were leaving.
That is my impression.
You're not going to respect our little secret, then?
I intend to expose you immediately.
Even if I assure you that we did not come here after the spoons, but rather to do two loving hearts a bit of good?
Your motives do not interest me.
You're a hard man, Baxter.
I do my duty.
Not always, surely. How about the toot in London?
I don't understand you.
You went to that bohemian ball. Horace Davenport saw you there.
Horace?
Yes, I admit that at the moment what Horace says is not evidence, simply because the Duke supposes that his young relative is suffering from hallucinations. But if you denounce me, my daughter and nephew will testify that they really are the persons he supposed them to be, and it will become clear to the Duke that when Horace says he saw you at the ball, he did see you at the ball. Then where will you be?
Attaboy, Uncle, it's a dead stymie.
I shall deny.
No, Baxter, I would reflect. You cannot unmask us without unmasking yourself. You would lose that splendid secretarial post of yours and have to go back to mixing with baronets.
But I shall...
So off you go, my dear fellow. I really think that we had better pursue a mutual policy of live and let live. Thank you.
But...
Good evening.
Uncle Fred, there have been times I don't mind admitting when I have viewed you with concern... But this time you have saved my life.
My dear boy, you embarrass me. And now, if you will excuse me, I promised the Duke to drop in on him for a chat round about 10 o'clock.
Are you sure?
He admitted it to me personally, Lady Constance.
But he's such a charming man.
Naturally. Charm is the chief stock in trade of persons of that type.
Oh, dear. There appears to be something about Blanding's castle that attracts imposters as catnip attracts cats. I suppose he's left the house.
Well, no, Lady Constance. A difficulty has arisen.
What difficulty?
I have to confess, the scoundrel has got me in something of a cleft stick.
A cleft stick?
Well, if I made anything in the nature of an overt move, it would result in my losing my post. It is my intention ultimately to become the Duke's man of affairs, in charge of all his interests. I hope I can rely on you to do nothing that will jeopardize my career.
But is there nothing to be done? Are we to allow this person to remain and loot the house at his leisure?
He is not here with any motive of robbery. I deduce that he has come in the hope of trapping Horace Davenport into marriage with that girl. It has now come back to me where I have seen her, at that poor Earl somewhere in London. Presumably, she has followed him here with the idea of compelling him to marry her.
I am appalled. But what can we do?
Surely, Lady Constance, a hint from you to the Duke that his nephew is in danger. After all, the daughter of a brain specialist, as she is pretending to be, is hardly...
Quite right, Mr. Baxter. Alaric has always been a perfect snob.
Rupert Baxter, feeling in need of fresh air, went strolling under the stars. His wandering feet took him to that velvet lawn which lay outside the garden suite. There, pacing up and down, brow knitted and hands clasped behind back, he gave himself up to thought. Now thinkers, while thinking, frequently whistle. Rupert Baxter did, selecting for his purpose a melody which had always been a favourite of his, the Bonnie Bonnie Banks of Loch Lomond.
A trouble it is there, and many hearts are sere on the bonny, bonny...
Ah! Ah! My elbow! Ooh. Ah! My shoulder! My shoulder!
Jolly well played, Basil.
No, not at all, Lord Barsam.
I say, Glossop, do you know why old Dunstable bunged an egg at Baxter?
I thought you might want to know that. There appears to be a member of the Blandings gardening staff who has a partiality for the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond, and he whistles and sings it outside the Duke's window. As a result, the Duke has for some time been lying in wait for him with a basket of eggs. Tonight, for some reason which I am unable to explain, Baxter put himself on as an understudy. The Duke and I were in the garden suite, chatting of this and that, when he suddenly came on the air, and the Duke, diving into a cupboard like a performing seal, emerged with laden hands and started to say it with eggs. I should have explained that he has a rooted distaste for that particular song.
Oh, there you are, Bosom.
Lady Constance, I've just been telling the boys about the Duke's unfortunate accident.
Bosom, I would like to speak to you.
Sir, sir, sir.
Follow me.
Certainly, Aunt Connie.
That's dashed odd, Pongo. Surely her manner was frigid?
I don't know about her manner. Her eye was piping hot.
Warm eye, cold manner. Can Baxter have been blowing the gaff after all? But no, he wouldn't dare. Anyway, our pig-snitching scheme is off. Purses of gold are not to be, I'm afraid. The Duke's strangled hold on Emsworth, you will recall, was the threat of wrecking the home with a poker. This accident, of course, has rendered him incapable of any serious poker work for some time to come. And Emsworth, seizing his advantage, has notified him that he cannot have the pig.
Well, a purse of gold would have come in handy, but better to give it a miss, I suppose, than pass a night of terror in a car with a pig, what?
Yes. Though another complication has arisen, which is going to make it a little difficult for us to linger here and look about for ways of your collecting cash from Horace.
Oh, my gosh, what's happened now?
You know Polly's minstrel boy? The poet with a punch?
Ricky, what about him?
He will shortly be with us.
What?
Yes, he's joining the troupe. The Duke confided in me. That pig, he said, had been definitely promised to him, and if Emsworth thought he could double-cross him, he was dashed well mistaken. The Duke intends to steal the pig, and has sent for Ricky Gilpin to come and do it.
But if Ricky meets Miss Pott, we shall be dished. She's his intended, for God's sake. You can't fool a hard-headed fellow like that, the way we did Horace.
Well, he won't actually be in residence. The Duke's instructions to him were to take a room at the Emsworth Arms. He may not meet Polly.
A fat chance.
Pretty obese, I admit.
Over here, Uncle Alaric. Good Lord, have you hurt yourself? I'm so sorry. How did it happen?
I put my shoulder out throwing an egg at my secretary. Get my telegram and my elbow.
I did.
Now look here, Ricky. Ever since I came to Blandings, there's been a mystery man whistling the Bonnie Bonnie Banks of Loch Lomond, day in and day out, on the lawn outside my room. Got on my nerves, beastly song.
Foul.
I wasn't going to stand it.
Quite right.
I laid in eggs.
Very sensible.
To throw at him.
Of course.
Turns out to be my secretary, Baxter. Last night, there he was again with his you take the high road and all the rest of it. I loosed off. And this morning, God, he says, I ought to be ashamed of myself for behaving like that to poor Mr. Baxter. She's potty, of course.
Mm. Try some of this beer, Uncle Eric.
Don't be ridiculous.
Lady Constance Keeble was a gifted raconteur. She had the knack of telling a story in a way that left her audience, even when it consisted of Lord Bosham, with a clear grasp of what she was talking about. After a shaky start, Lord Bosham followed her like a bloodhound.
So do you understand, Bosham?
Absolutely, Aunt Connie. Blandings Castle is overrun, not with mice, but impostors. What ho? Impostors.
You understand. Impostors.
What ho? Then, by Jove, it turns out that this bird was the bird after all.
Oh, Bosham.
What?
Really, there are times when you're exactly like your father.
No, no, no. The confidence trick bird. Dash it, you can't have forgotten me telling you about the suave bimbo who got away with my wallet in Park Lane.
You don't mean...
Yes, that's just what I do mean. When I met him at the station, the first thing I said to myself was, what ho, the bird. And then I said to myself, no, not the bird, because you had told me he was a big bug in the medical world.
Oh.
But now you tell me he isn't a big bug in the medical world.
Bosham, this settles it. Mr. Baxter was wrong. He thinks these people have come down here to trap Horace Davenport into marrying the girl. I don't believe it. They're after my diamond necklace. We must act immediately.
What ho?
Uncle Alaric, you've been subjected to a campaign of deliberate and systematic persecution. What do you want me to do? Throw some more eggs at this man, Baxter? Say the word and I start today.
No, give me your hand, Ricky, my boy. Sorry, forgot. Anyway, after tonight, there won't be any Baxter to throw eggs at. I'm sacking him. That's him over there by the fireplace. Drove me here. Now, what I've come to talk to you about is this pig.
What pig would that be?
Emsworth. He promised to give it to me. Nothing done in writing, of course, but a gentleman's agreement. And now he says he won't.
What? The man must be a louse of the first water.
No, my boy, give me a...
So I suppose you want me to pinch this pig for you?
Precisely. When you're dealing with men like Emsworth, you can't be too nice in your methods.
I should say not. Well, how do I set about it?
Have your pencil and paper. I'll draw a map for you.
Here you are. There's a few rough notes for a ballade on it.
Good. Here's the castle. Here's my room. It's got a lawn outside, you see?
Got it. Looks a bit like a fried egg.
What? Now, along here, the drive. Shrubbery, meadow. In this meadow is the sty where the pig resides. You see the strategic significance of this. Anybody removing that pig from its sty could dive into the shrubbery with it, thus securing excellent cover. Only time he'd be in danger of being observed would be when crossing the lawn to my room. And I propose to select a moment for the operation when there will be no eyewitnesses.
I'm going to keep the animal in your room, Uncle Harry.
Of course. It's on the ground floor, serviceable French windows. What's simpler than to bring the pig in through these windows and lodge it in the bathroom?
What, and keep it there all night?
Who said anything about night? It enters the bathroom at 2 p.m. Use your intelligence. At 2:00, everyone's at lunch. Butler, footman, maids of all descriptions, and the pig man having his dinner. So the coast is clear.
Well, I'm impressed, Uncle.
Now, throughout the afternoon, the pig remains in the bathroom. During dinner, you will return. You will have a car waiting here. You will remove the pig, place it in the car, and drive it to my house in Wiltshire. Think you can do it?
On my head. If I may say so, it's a plan of genius.
Would you call it that?
Absolutely. Oh, by the way, Uncle Alaric, there's just one small point. Would you rather give me your check before I pinch the pig, or after?
What?
But half a jiffy, Aunt Connie. If you know these bounders are wrong'uns, why don't we just whistle up the local police force?
We can't, you blockhead. It would mean that Mr. Baxter would lose his position with Alaric.
Why? Why would Baxter lose his position? Yes, all right. But I'll tell you one thing. I don't intend to be far away from my father's shotgun these next few days. This is official.
I say, what are you doing, Aunt Connie?
I'm trying to stamp my foot, you idiot, but it's not easy from a sitting position.
Ah. As I was saying...
There is only one thing to do. We must send for a detective to watch these people.
Why, of course! That's the stuff. And by jingo, I know just the fella. That man of Horace's.
What man of Horace's?
The fella Horace told me about on the drive down. A friend of his engaged him to, do something or other.
And did he do it?
Oh, yes, he did it.
He's competent, then?
Oh, most competent.
What is his name?
Pot. Claude Pot.
Oh!
I'll be in Scotland before ye, but trouble it is there, and many hearts are sere on the bonny, bonny banks of Lough.
In part one of Uncle Fred in the Springtime by P.G. Wodehouse, Uncle Fred was played by Alfred Molina, Lady Constance by Patricia Hodge, the Duke of Dunstable by Christopher Neame, Ricky Gilpin by Rufus Sewell, and Rupert Baxter by Jared Harris. Horace Davenport was played by Lloyd Owen, Lord Bosom by Simon Templeman, and Pongo Twistleton by Matthew Wolfe. Sophie Winkleman played Polly Pot, and Martin Jarvis was the Earl of Emsworth. Mustard Pot, Julian Holloway. Webster, Darren Richardson. The Porter, Alan Shearman. The Singing Gardener, Mark Holden. And Beach the Butler, Kenneth Danziger. Ian Ogilvie was the voice of P.G. Wodehouse. Uncle Fred in the Springtime was dramatised by Archie Scottney, directed by Martin Jarvis, and is a Jarvis and Ayres production for BBC Radio 4.
And you can hear the second part of Uncle Fred in the Springtime next Sunday at the same time, 3 o'clock.
You never forget it when someone gives you a story that transports you to another world.
Last year, on World Book Night, 1 million books were given away for free. Mariella Frostrup discovers how it affected those involved.
I'd forgotten I was a bookworm. I used to read all the time when I was a kid.
The first couple of pages were really engaging, and I did think, ooh, I want to know what happens to these characters.
They couldn't believe it, really, that they were actually being given something for nothing. It was amazing.
1 in a Million, tomorrow afternoon at 4 on BBC Radio 4.
And Mariella will be here right after the news. She'll be talking to the award-winning writer Timothy Moe about his first book for over a decade.